Alan Crane Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for Autumn Semester 2022. Today, stock valuation. I have a surprise quiz for you on Wednesday, and just as a quick heads up, I'll have you do a bond price and a bond yield, and then a couple more questions, more general questions on bonds, and maybe a little bit about stock, no math, not the CAPM, but some of the other issues that are involved with the efficient frontier of investments and the two different types of risk. That would be what I'd be asking about for that quiz on Wednesday. So it's not a terribly it's not a beast of a quiz, but it is it'll keep you busy for a while. Today? Okay. I'm having a hard time keeping volume at a tolerable level on this. Okay. Moving along here. Stock valuation, but before we do that, we should have a look at the numbers to see what's going on. Let's make sure we're staying on track here with today's stuff. Let's see, bull day or bear day? Don't say I'm going to say that is a bull. That is a real bull of a day. Yeah, that's a strong upswing. The odd thing, the interesting thing is notice that the Dow, the big 30, slow-moving, giants of the earth is up the most. The S&P 500 is up pretty good, and the NASDAQ is the one that's trailing, but it's still up a decent amount. So in other words, whatever news is getting the market all kinds of happy right now is tilted toward larger companies. The bigger the company, the better the market was rewarding them today. Interestingly, I took a long position this morning, a risky long position, and it's actually paying off for me right now pretty well, very nicely. And then I'll show you another one just as an example. But before we go on to that, crude is bouncing around in that 82 to 89. It just seems to like that territory a lot. And so it just kind of parks in there. And so gas prices aren't going to drop through the floor, but they're certainly not going to go through the roof either. Now, they may fluctuate, partly because the oil prices fluctuate, but also because of other issues. Remember, oil, when it's pulled out of the ground, it has a number of things that can be done with it. Everything from gasoline to the distillates like diesel and jet fuel and kerosene. So, in other words, sometimes the gas prices move, not because crude oil is doing something particularly dramatic, but because supply and demand dynamics for the other uses for crude oil are causing the price to move around for gasoline. So always keep that in mind, but don't expect any dramatic moves up or down right now in gas prices at the pump. Oil is staying in a very stable region. And of course, well, I shouldn't say of course, markets in general don't like instability. They don't like these kinds of high volatility risks. Now, in my business, where I deal in futures and other derivatives, risk is everything. Volatility is, as I tell my students, volatility is our God. But for responsible, normal people, when we're in our normal phase, we don't like that kind of volatility. So oil staying where it is actually a good sign overall for the economy and for investments. Now, over here, we see gold just not doing anything. Silver bobbling around, hardly moving at all. You can see the spark charts there. So in other words, there's no movement of money into or out of those metals. The 10-year bond just up a little bit, maybe 1.5 basis point up, which means the price is down just a little bit. That money is going out of bonds, and of course, that's part of what is fueling this stock market increase. However, there's another thing going on here too. The bond prices are down a little bit. So that means a little money is coming out of bonds and probably going to stocks. But this rise is a lot more money than would be coming out of bonds. So it would tell me that there's money being pulled in from high liquidity mutual money markets. So in other words, you've seen a little bit of confidence in the market that things look like they might be getting better soon. Looking very quickly at the S&P 500 volume, though. Oh, that's bad volume. See that? There's still a lot of money on the sidelines. I mean, on an average day over the last year, there were 4 billion shares of S&P 500 stocks traded. And the volume today is less than 2 billion. Market isn't closed yet, but it's not going to be hardly anything. So there's still a lot of money on the sidelines, but at least some of it is going over here and getting involved with the equities. And that's a pretty strong, that's a darn strong day. And it's still surging here in the here towards the end, the bell. So good news for all of us, good economy and all of that tells us that we're going to maybe get out of this recession. It's funny, a lot of these newspapers are saying we're going to go into a recession. No, we've been in a kind of a lull recession. We've been in a recession. Now we're in the recovery. Like I said, though, and remember to keep this in mind, if you're thinking about investments and all that, the Christmas season this year, the holiday season is going to be crucial. If we have a robust, yes. Yes?
I was going to ask, do you know if that controls the temperature in the
glass? No, you see, it's set right on medium rare, and right now if I had an apple in my mouth, I'd think I was at a luau.
It's 85 degrees. That's
really? No, go ahead. I mean, good luck with that. Now, should I tell her about the electrocution device in there?
No.
Oh, this could be cool.
Yeah.
It's locked, isn't it?
No.
Oh, I don't want that. I mean, yeah, I'm getting older, but I don't want to slow down that much, the aging process. You're making it blink. Set it at warp 6. Yeah, I mean, up here at the front, I've got all this heat coming around me. Okay, where the hell was I? I mean, oh, it is warm in here. It definitely is. But, I was going to show you, just keep up with the screens and all of that. Now, I threw a bet on a certain stock. For God's sake, one more time, do not follow me on investments. It's just like, don't follow me about making food. You'll probably get sick. Now, why am I going to throw a bet on Twitter? Why? There's a rumor that the whole deal with Twitter and Musk is going to come to an end. If that's an end that I think it is, that's a very strong sign for Twitter. Let's see if I did okay today. Well, spank me, Jesus. Yes, I did. The rumor. Now, here's the thing, and I've said this one before. One of the oldest pieces of advice among the professionals like I am, buy on the rumor, sell on the news. So as soon as I see that there's news coming out, I'm going to get the H out of this investment. Because whichever way it goes, right now the rumor is very favorable that Musk is going to bail. And that would mean that Twitter would stay on its own and remain a strong company. But if the baked ham gets it, then it's probably going to drive it into the ground. So right now the rumor is he's not. And so that's why the price is going up now. What was I going to show you? No, that's enough. But looking really quick, notice that Twitter has an extremely low beta. That is a very safe beta. But that price earnings ratio is stupid. In other words, the price over the earnings is way above 30 or 40 or whatever you want to take as a threshold, which means that that price is way too high right now. It's overvalued. Now, if I'm a long-term investor, I'm going to bark behind the sofa like a bunch of poodles at that. But for right now, overvaluation is fine, and I am betting that there's going to be some more overvaluation. Then long-term down the road, the stock price is going to collapse. Either that or the earnings will rise, and that will cause the denominator to rise in P/E ratio, and that will cause P/E ratio to fall. But that's part of the subject of today's lecture, the distinction between market and intrinsic. In the long run, we care about intrinsic value. That's how you do long-term investments. But in the short run, we don't care about the intrinsic value. What we want to do is play the market. And right now, the market is in the mood to make him, or make a Twitter rather, a massively higher priced stock than it should be. Fine with me, I'll get out before hell breaks loose and the inevitable happens and the P/E ratio falls again. But again, that's one of the subjects of today's lecture, which is about stock and stock valuation. And the whole valuation thing, as I had said, is all about, I'm afraid to keep looking at this for fear we're going to look at that. It's tailing over. Do you see that right there? That's a get out sign, because see how just that little tiny bit of the spark chart there at the end, it's coming over the hump and it's probably going to be some profit taking in the end. In other words, prices go up, and then what happens is that I do this too. I'll say, okay, the price has gone up enough for me today. I'm going to collect my profits and get out. And that's why you'll see that rise and then the drop off as profit takers like me pull ourselves out. Just collect what we want, have a great dinner at Denny's, 2 grand slams, and maybe some of that pie that they got. It's not the pumpkin spice crap, for God's sake. Anyway, enough of that. Let me take you off this for a little bit here. Stock valuation. And now, as I said, the entire goal, as time goes on, and the price of a stock, now in a short-term framework, it is going to vibrate up and down. Stocks do that. That is, not essentially, it is an example of a universal process called Brownian motion. In other words, things bounce around. They don't stay in one place. And that's where the mathematics of this all come from, what we do at a little bit higher powered level. We analyze, we understand the physics of it, but it's certainly not a stable process. It's just going to vibrate and bounce up and down. Now, one point I do want to make here is that over a long period of time, there are different kinds of random walks. There's the one that's the random walk with no pattern. It always will, a random walk that has a zero mean. In other words, it'll bounce around, but it'll eventually get to its target. That's one of the things that we try to tell people: when you are lost, just start walking. Don't try to identify objects, just keep moving, because that's the most likely way that you're going to get to some goal out there. Because a zero mean, in other words, it'll find its way to its target, but it'll just sort of move around along the way. Then there are two other kinds. There's one called a super martingale. It actually has, or it's a random walk that goes downward over time. And then there's another one called a sub-martingale, which is the way stocks work. They do have a tendency, they're random walks, but they have a bias upward. And this is the physics of the stock markets, that over a long period of time, they will go up. Now, we can even tell you, based upon some pretty heavy math, there's a parameter, it's kind of like a constant of nature, or it was supposed to be, that told us over a long period of time how much the stock market would go up. So over a long period of time, there was, it tended to go up about on an annualized rate over many, many decades at a rate of about 8 to 10%. It had to do with a parameter that was like a constant. It was called Tobin's Q, but never mind that. Interestingly enough, in your generation, we have a lot of evidence that Tobin's Q has dropped. So in other words, your grandparents would have put money into a stock market, and over a very long period of time, in a relatively well-balanced, moderate risk portfolio, they would have earned about 10%. And you'll see that. I'll show you that in Wednesday's lecture. Now, we are pretty sure that Tobin's Q has changed. So you doing exactly the same thing as your grandparents probably aren't going to see more than a 7% return. We don't know exactly why, although something, maybe it has to do with the size of the population of the Earth. I don't know. But yeah, you're not going to benefit as much as, you say, your grandparents would have. But at the same time, you have a confidence that the stock market is not separate from nature, it's part of nature, so it's going to follow a process that is through the universe. In our case, it's a sub-martingale. Stocks will go up, not any individual stock, but if you've got a decently well-diversified portfolio, it can go up. Now, before I get into too much of the mumbo-jumbo of this lecture, I do want to show you a website here. And of course, they won't let me keep my own bookmarks. in here, so I'm going to have to do a quick Google search to do this. Google.com, stock correlations. This is called the Portfolio Visualizer. Yeah, here it is. And I'll put this in my scrolling marquee on my website, isu-prof.com. Now, here's how it works. Oh, come on. Financial tools, personal visualizer, come on. Portfolio visualizer, online, get started, investment. Wait, come on. Why are they making it so, no, this isn't the portfolio visualizer. The portfolio, there it is, there. That's the one I want. Okay, now what this does, you can type in ticker symbols and it will show the correlations among the stocks. Remember I told you that in a well-diversified portfolio, what you want is to get stocks that aren't well correlated, because then they'll cancel out each other's diversifiable non-systematic risk. Now you should remember those two terms for your quiz on Wednesday. Diversifiable, non-systematic risk, and the other kind that you can't get rid of, which is systematic, non-diversifiable risk. So what we're looking for here are stocks that have low correlation. So they'll help eliminate each other's diversifiable risk. Now, just throw in a few symbols. Facebook. No, that's Ford, FB. Okay, let's do Walmart. WMT, what else? Come on. mRNA, Moderna, Ford, Tesla, Microsoft, MSFT. In other words, what we're doing is we're saying which ones of all these would be good together in a portfolio. And I'm looking at MSFT, what else would, something outside of this, Target, Pfizer, come on, something else. Lockheed Martin, what's Lockheed's? Lockheed. Oh, now you're not going to help me, are you? General Mills. Really? Just irritates me. Come on, it usually tells me these symbols if I ask it. Trying to think of something else that's off the beaten track. Amazon, AMZN. AMZN. Now let me show you what's going to happen. You'll get what's called a correlation matrix. This will be fine, 36 months. What's Facebook? What's Facebook? Come on. It's Meta. Well, what's its ticker symbol?
M-E-T-A.
Oh, okay, la-di-da. Okay, and Meta. Oh, Meta, M-E-T-A. Okay, now let's see it. There you go. Now, have a look. Okay, Meta is obviously one with itself. With Walmart, okay, here's my rule. A 0.30 is my limit. Anything below that's good. Anything above that, you're probably not getting a lot of portfolio diversification effect. So Walmart and Meta are not good in the same. But here, Meta and Moderna have very little to do with each other, and their correlation coefficient shows it. Now, with Ford, that's a weird one, that Meta and Ford have a high correlation. Same with Tesla. Oh, well, obviously with Microsoft, that makes sense. But look at that. Do you see that Meta is actually not a good choice with other stocks? It's got too much correlation with about everything. Now, why is that? Well, I can speculate. Facebook makes a lot of its revenue off advertising by corporations. So where those corporations go with their advertising budgets, Meta is dependent upon it. That's part of why it's so highly correlated with so many things, but not with Moderna, because Moderna doesn't advertise. Now Walmart. Now with Moderna, again, with Ford. Walmart's good with Ford. Tesla, not so good, and that's hard to explain. Why Walmart and Tesla would have a stronger correlation? Sometimes it's easy to explain, sometimes not. Walmart and Microsoft, what the heck is that all about? And with Target, oh, well, that makes sense. They're competitors, so they would be highly correlated. And then with Pfizer, that's right there on, and with Amazon, well, competitors, so there you go. So what you're doing is you're seeing the stocks that are probably the best. Now look at Moderna. Notice that Moderna is actually pretty good, not with Pfizer, because it competes with Pfizer for the vaccine. And Microsoft, I can't figure that one out, but you can see that Moderna is actually a pretty good investment in almost any portfolio. It's low correlation with a lot of things. Go down here to Ford with Meta, good. Tesla, low. Well, now that's interesting. Ford and Tesla don't have a high correlation. Why would that be? Because Ford is fossil fuel engines, Tesla is all electric engines. So they are actually appealing to different markets, pretty much. Microsoft, I can't figure that out. Why is notice Microsoft is, look down here. Do you see how Microsoft is highly correlated with a lot of things? So Microsoft is probably not a good idea to put in a portfolio if you're looking for diversification, removal of that diversifiable risk. Tesla, It's kind of all over the board. It's okay with Pfizer, okay with Ford and Moderna. But other than that, Tesla has some pretty strong correlations. Look at that correlation between Tesla and Amazon. That's kind of telling you that those Tesla's just kind of flagging target. Obviously, well, I don't know why it's with Meta, but obviously with Walmart, low with Moderna. Target is actually too correlated with Ford. Can't figure that one out. Target, with Pfizer, Pfizer and Moderna both. And with Amazon, now that's interesting. It's right on the border line there. Interestingly, I would think that that would be a higher correlation, but the numbers aren't lying. So then Pfizer going across here, it's very low with Ford, obviously. With Tesla, we already saw that. Microsoft low, Target low, Amazon. So Pfizer is actually more of one of those you'd put into a portfolio. It's low correlation with quite a few things. Coming down here to Amazon, there's not a lot. Matter of fact, I don't see Amazon as being a good investment in any portfolio. It's just got too much correlation, too many correlation issues. And so this is how one of our basic tools, I mean, if you don't want to do real fancy math and all of that, just go to this portfolio visualizer and you'll see the kinds of stocks that are more likely to get rid of that diversifiable risk for which you earn no reward. So keep that in mind when you're doing your stocks. Now, on to some bigger and better things. Stock. Stock represents equity. Now, over a long period of time, what we're looking for is that underlying hum, where it goes over a long period of time, because that's where the responsible investments happen. I mean, we all play our little side bets, and I talk about those side bets. But in your main portfolio, you're trying your best to look at a much longer term for a stock. That's the intrinsic value hiding under the surface. So the formulas that I'll show you today and on Wednesday, they're not looking for market price. They are looking for that intrinsic value. And then we say, okay, obviously if I see a market price up here on this peak, it's above the value, and therefore I'm going to probably not put that into my portfolio. Another point about this is if I'm a corporate analyst and we're deciding when we are going to sell stock, we're going to do our stock sales when we see ourselves way overvalued. That's the way it works. So when you buy stock in an IPO or right after an IPO, I would guarantee you that the company has analyzed the long-term versus the intrinsic versus the market, and they have figured we're at our peak right now. That's good for them because they get the most money per share for the stock that they sell. It's bad for you because it is probably going to go down from there, at least for a while. So that you want to keep that in mind, that all the excitement about buying into an IPO or right after an IPO, you got to figure that the company is not stupid. They hire people like me, like people who are better than I am, that have huge computers, to figure out where their market price is versus the intrinsic price. They're not going to just say, let's sell some stock today. That's not how they do it. They do it scientifically. Everything is based upon rational, logical mathematics. So just remember that when you're deciding if you're going to buy into a stock. And it also, valuation. It's kind of hard to do the valuation. You'll see the math of it in the calculator. I've got some nice little tricks we can do on the calculator to get do the math. But one way or the other, we do want to know the intrinsic values for our investment purposes. and for other purposes as well, but I'll talk about that later. Now, stock, equity, we use the fancy term equity. So, when you're at a dinner party, you're going to not say, well, I invest in stocks. You say, no, I take long positions in equities. Okay. Yeah, I mean, you will go home with a friend if you use equities instead of stock. Okay, equity. Fancy word for stock. Now, there's common stock. That's the kind that you're pretty much familiar with, all these charts and everything I show. And then, of course, there's the preferred stock, which I explained to you earlier in the course. Now, for the most part, I will focus on the common stock, but I'll have a few things to say about the preferred stock, too. The valuation model for intrinsic value of a preferred share is very easy. It's just a perpetuity. In other words, you take the price of a preferred share, and I'll just write this here, is that constant dividend that lasts forever. Remember that the stock certificate says some percent of par value. They give you the par value. That's the dividend. And then all you do then is divide it by the market's current risk assessment. Now, how do we get that current risk assessment? One of the ways is to use the capital asset pricing model. Remember the expected return to a stock is going to be the risk-free rate plus the beta of the stock times expected return to the market portfolio minus the risk-free rate. That's one of the most common ways to find that to divide by. So we can value preferred stock, its intrinsic value, very easily. Actually, it's even easier than that. I should say. But anyway, preferred stock is uninteresting. It's boring stock. So let's talk about the very exciting, sexy world of common stock. Now, oddly enough, there are different kinds of common stock. Now, the book breaks it into the founder's shares versus the outsider's shares. You will probably never own founder's shares. Those are the shares that are held by the insiders. They have super voting rights, so those founder's shares can allow the insiders to maintain control of the corporation. And founder's shares are, even if they're out there to buy, they are expensive AF. I'll show you an example of them, and I think I've shown you this example before. Berkshire Hathaway. Any of you know who owns or who's the big dog in Berkshire Hathaway? We'll say it. Warren Buffett. Yeah, he is a big dog. So let me show you. There are two classes of Berkshire Hathaway. There are the baby Berks that you can buy. You get one vote per share at the board meeting, at the annual elections of board, and you could grab yourself a share of that. You might even, well, I've got a share, so I can go to the annual shareholders meeting. Yeah, you can, but they'll keep you in the waiting room. But then there are the big Berks. These are the insider's shares. Remember, the price of a baby Berk is $288 a share. That's the price of a single share of the big Berks, $436,310. There you go. Yeah, you might want to check under the seat of your car to see if you got enough to grab one of those, maybe a round lot of 100 of them. But yeah. Now, if you own one of these, you get super voting rights, and you will get to sit in the same room for the annual shareholders dinner with Warren himself. But these are, Look at that. Hey, it's up $9,107 today. Boy, that's an investment. But no, you can't have one of these. Interestingly enough, though, I was checking around to see if any of those ETFs had big Berks in them. I couldn't find any that had. Now, maybe they are, but I just couldn't find any of the big of the funds that had a, because it'd be cool. I buy the ETF and then I could say, I have equity in Berkshire Hathaway Class A. Okay, anyway, enough of that. Okay, but so that gives you, now, interestingly enough, there are other companies that have that founder stock, inside stock. Some people call it the family stock, the founder stock. Ford has insider stock. Walmart has insider stock. It's almost impossible to buy some of these. And interestingly enough, this is how these companies, the original owners, maintain control of the company. Sometimes it doesn't work, and enough shares are outstanding that are normal shares to overrun the founder's shares. An example of that was more than a few years ago. The Packard family controlled Hewlett-Packard through its founder stock. But they unknowingly hired a CEO who was working with a group for a hostile takeover, and they managed to do it and wipe out the family's legacy. And that was a great deal of bitterness. That CEO went on to run for Congress, I believe, Carly Fiorina, and she was not perceived as being a particularly desirable person considering what she had done as a trusted insider to the Packard family. But there you go. Okay, now, enough of that. Voting. At the top of a corporation is the board of directors. At the top of a corporation is the board of directors. They are elected by the shareholders in an annual shareholders meeting. The board of directors. Now they are brought in, they are elected by the shareholders. Now obviously, well, let me go through that here first. When you own a share of stock, let's say that the board has four officer positions and maybe two at large. The officers would be, usually are called the president. That's not an executive. The president runs the board. And then you'll probably have at least one vice president. And then you'll have a treasurer. And then you'll have the secretary. And then you might have some other members at large. Or you might have a couple of vice presidents. Let's just keep it to four for now, just to make it a little simpler in its construction. Now, this is would be the layout, the most fundamental layout for an American corporation. In other parts of the world, there are laws that require that the corporation also have board members that are not associated in any other way with the corporation. In fact, in several European countries, they require that the board have a government representative as a member of the board of directors. So that's getting into what we call this really hot new field called corporate governance. How do we make American corporations more responsive to the world around them? And like we're ever going to see legislation in this country that does that, but we can still talk about it as something that is desirable. And some corporations are voluntarily doing it. What was that? Well, yeah. Well, interestingly enough, corporate governance has gotten to be such a hot topic. We actually, I think it was the last professor that we could have, that we had the money to hire for finance. She is a corporate governance specialist. And it's that important these days. And some corporations trying to actually be responsible and responsive have actually adopted the European model to the extent that they require that there are outside directors that have no other connections to the corporation. Now, in this process, you, madam, own one share of Professor Kring Incorporated, Global Solutions for Trivial Problems. Okay, what that means is that your one share will have one vote for each of these positions. Now, in some charters, you could concentrate your four votes and use all four for one position. I'm the president of the corporation. You decide, well, he sucks, so we're going to get rid of him. You would focus all of your votes on that one position to kick him out. Okay, you can, but that's not in all charters. Some charters allow concentrated voting like that. Now, the next thing, of course, is obviously then the founder's shares, their supermajority. So in other words, whereas you have one vote per share, you, madam, would have 10 votes per share because you have the Class A stock, the founder's shares. That allows the founders or the insiders to maintain control of the corporation. And then once the board is elected, then they appoint the executives. The CEO, the chief executive officer, the chief financial officer, the CFO, the chief operating officer, the COO, and now in modern times, we see a couple of others. A lot of corporations now have a CIO, a chief information officer. And some corporations even have one or two other weird ones, but I think there was, what was that corporation? They wanted to make an executive position for some important fancy person, so they created an executive called the Chief Creative Officer or something like that. But one way or the other, these are the executives. They're hired by the board of directors. This is one of the focuses of malcontent, of discontent, is that essentially, in many of the largest corporations, this is a purely incestuous relationship. These are all Wall Street people, and they take care of each other. That's why a CEO can screw up, and they'll just keep reappointing him. It's just a terrible thing in the United States that we can't break this cycle of this old boys relationship that's been there for centuries. We can't get through it in any meaningful way in a lot of corporations today. And we also have other problems, too, that in this whole regard. But here's the other thing about it. I am the president. I am in cahoots. We're all friends. We're all associates at the board rank. So what I'm going to do is we're going to send out a card to you. It's called a proxy. The proxy says, please sign this and you assign your votes to us so that we can put our wonderful selves back on the board for the next year. That's a proxy. In other words, you sign your votes over to the insiders so that they can vote for themselves again. That's wonderful. Now, there's another side to it too. You, madam.
I'm dying. That's what I'm saying right now.
Will you calm down, woman?
I'm hot. I'm burning up.
Yes.
I'll
leave you alone. Yeah. And it's, okay. Well, you know, I'm hot too, but, you know.
Yeah, oh, so.
Okay, let's try this one. You, sir, you are a predator. And I'm not talking about one of those who sends Venmo money to girls. I'm talking about. I'm talking about you want to take over my corporation. You are a hostile takeover specialist. What you're going to do is you're going to send out a counter proxy. You're going to tell her, you know, that board of directors really sucks. Why don't you give your votes to me? Now, you're going to buy shares yourself. You can buy up to 5% of the company, but then you have to disclose what you're doing, and everyone's going to say, wait a minute, Do we have a proxy war going on? And of course, that's going to make the stock price start to go up, because you're going to have to keep bidding upward on the stock price to gather more stock. You're also going to be trying to get proxy control from outside shareholders. You might even have one of these who turns coat on you, on me, and assigns his votes to you. But that's the beginning of a hostile takeover. Getting enough votes so that you can kick out the board, or at least one key player on the board if you have concentrated voting rights. And that will give you enough to get rid of these people and get your own slate of executives. So in other words, you are going to propose a counter slate of board members. And once you've got that counter slate in, you'll get rid of these people and get your own in. The trick with Hewlett-Packard was that the CEO was on the side of the hostile, of the Black Knight. Okay? So now, how do I stop it? This is when the story gets fun. This is what I did in part of my consulting. They're called poison pills. I'm going to make you vomit. If you try to swallow my company, I'll hurt you bad. And you might not even make it. And then if you fail, your stock price is going to go into the toilet. So here are some of the poison pills that I can lay out for you. Poison pill one, I can just simply say, if we're all fired, we all get golden parachutes of multi-millions of dollars. So yeah, go ahead and take us over, but you're going to have to pay so much that you'll ruin the value of the company in your takeover. Another thing we do is we'll find a white knight. A white knight, you are on my side. You're a big corporation. Why don't you counter proxy to him? Promise you, you can take over the corporation, just guarantee that we still have our jobs and everything will still be the same as it was, but you'll own us. So the white knight starts a counter proxy of its own, buys a certain concentration of shares from the public markets, and then starts to get proxy cards out to get more control, and then offers the moon to the shareholders. If we get in, we will see this stock price go through the roof. A white knight steps in to save my butt. Other poison pills. One of the, a classic one is simply start borrowing money. Increase the leverage of that company so much that its debt load is going to destroy that company trying to pay it. Okay? That's another poison pill. Another poison pill is, if I can pull it off, and it'd have to do with the charter, I can make super voting shares. I could create another class of super voting shares so that I can overwhelm you. That's not easy to do, probably not legal in a lot of corporations, but it's something out there. There are all kinds of poison pills that I can start spitting out to stop you from getting proxy control of the board. Because if you get it, I lose my job, all of my buddies on Wall Street lose their jobs, and all of that kind of stuff. So there you are. That's another thing. Right off the bat, before anything else, if you don't want ever to have to deal with a proxy war, you just make sure the number of insiders' shares is huge. Microsoft did that in its early time. Other corporations, even my corporation, I make sure that I have the majority of shares personally, so there could never be a proxy war on me. Sure, go ahead and buy my stock. Buy those shares that are out there. I'll be happy if you do. That'll drive the stock price up, make me richer. Okay? So making sure that you can never actually lose majority control by concentrating the founder's shares to the extent that 51% of the stock outstanding is your own. Okay? Now this gets into another interesting side battle called the preemptive rights. In most corporations, if new stock is issued, the old stockholders have the right, but not the obligation, to buy enough shares to maintain their percentage ownership. So in other words, if a company has 100 million shares outstanding, and I own 10 million of those, the company decides that it is going to issue another 1 million shares, I have the right to buy 500,000 shares. I don't have to, but I have the right to maintain my percentage interest in the company. Those are called preemptive rights. Preemptive rights. Now, there's another part to this, too. A fascinating little trick. What was it? I'm so sick. I try to set that thing on silent, and I don't. Go to hell. Yeah, go to hell. Ooh, don't yell at me. Anyway, where was I? God, it is so hot in here. I am at medium rare.
I think you should call it.
Oh, yeah, like. Okay, I'll tell you what. Let me get one more thing in, and then we're just going to bag this. We're going to blow this popsicle stand.
Can you fix it? It's literally
hotter
than it
is
here. I'm dying.
Yeah, I mean.
There's no way to fix it.
Right now, I'm feeling very manly. I got sweat on my armpits. Okay.
That does not make you
feel. It does, too. Look at Arnold Schwarzenegger. Even when he was that Terminator, he sweated. No, that and the fact that he hasta la vista, baby. Okay, here's the other thing. With respect to the stock, insiders cannot just sell their stock whenever they want. They are governed. Insiders' shares are called restricted. And this is not in the book. The restriction is set by Rule 144. They cannot sell stock except in certain time frames and no more than a certain amount. Rule 144, called restricted stock, prevents them from dumping their stock too much. And also, they cannot dump it if there's some important news that is about to be released, like their earnings. They have only these narrow windows in which their attorneys can say, they are allowed to release some stock from Rule 144 so that it can be publicly traded. But other than that, their stock is actually not freely tradable like yours would be. I'll pick this up on Wednesday. That's all I have for you.